This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by MM Comfort Systems. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The coronavirus.
So experts do not think that herd immunity is likely in the United States. And that's almost certainly going to be the case outside of the United States. And yet governors and mayors and others in positions of power are putting in place policies that are based on getting to herd immunity. It makes no sense. Now, tomorrow, Governor Inslee is likely to institute some rollbacks. He's going to announce some rollbacks. What they are, we'll see. How many? We'll see. We believe that Snohomish County and King County will be hit, among other counties. That's unfortunate because it will be crippling to some businesses. It's going to be signing the death certificate for a lot of them.
I'm at a mental breaking point, honestly. I'm ready to close my restaurant and walk away.
That's Joey Hopps. She's the owner of Pit Stop Tap Room and Pub in Burien. And she was talking to Como TV, and you can hear the pain in her voice. Because she believes that she might go out of business as a result of having to be reverted back into that phase number two category, which would mean she's only able to operate at 25% capacity, which for a lot of businesses and bars, they might as well be closed down. She's having right now difficulty staying open, in large part because she can't even get employees to stay.
They're leaving the industry altogether to go somewhere where the schedule is more consistent.
How are you supposed to operate a business under those circumstances? And while half of the adults in the country have at least one dose of the vaccine in them right now, the daily vaccination rate is slipping. And it's slipping because I think truly awful messaging coming from the White House, coming from politicians who insist on you wearing a mask even after getting vaccinated. And yet we're told the best way to get to a fully open society again is to get vaccinated and to get to herd immunity, which only comes, they say, after getting vaccinated, which, of course, is not true. Their position makes no sense. Their position is undermining the efficacy of the vaccine or how the efficacy is viewed of the vaccine. So you've got this New York Times piece that came out, and it says the widespread consensus among scientists and public health experts is that the herd immunity threshold is not attainable. At least not in the foreseeable future, and perhaps not ever. So why is that? Because before it was, hey, we're going to get, the goal is to get to herd immunity by the summer. And the way we get that is enough shots in arms. So what's going on? It's not merely because less people are getting their shots right now as we wanted them to. Although, again, it is very true that the hesitancy has risen. And especially true of that second shot, there are more and more people who are stepping back and saying, not going to do it. And again, I believe that to be due to really, really bad messaging. That's not the reason. Instead, the New York Times says, the virus will most likely become a manageable threat that will continue to circulate in the United States for years to come, still causing hospitalizations and deaths, but in much smaller numbers. Why? Because the variants change and spread too quickly for herd immunity to take shape. It says continued immunizations, especially for people at highest risk because of age, exposure, or health status, will be crucial to limiting the severity of outbreaks, if not their frequency, experts believe. So in other words, it's going to be treated like the flu moving forward, if what these experts believe hold true. So the tragic irony in all of this, after this last year of dealing with COVID, the way we've dealt with it, is experts now believe we're going to treat COVID effectively the same way we've been treating the flu in the past. Now, is COVID exactly the same as the flu? No. Is it more deadly than the flu? Yes. However, according to the experts, we are basically going to treat it almost exactly the same as the flu. you're going to be mitigating the downsides to the circulation of COVID. And yet tomorrow, we're going to revert back some of these counties into phase number two. Restaurants are going to get hit the hardest. Anthony Anton, for example, the Washington Hospitality Association. He notes yet again, restaurants are not at fault here. They didn't ask for any of this. And yet they're the ones who are going to get hit with even higher and higher and higher debt.
They're very frustrated that yet again, their debt's going to keep piling up through no fault of their own. We're not where the cases are coming from. We know this is the spring break wave.
And for what will they get more and more and more of this debt? For what? For what are we reverting back into this rollout? For what are we moving backwards? For what? If we're going to treat this essentially like we're going to treat, or we've treated the flu and continue to treat the flu, what is this all for? What is the point? Vaccines are widely available right now. Anyone who wants a vaccine pretty much can get one. We all know the risks of COVID. Every single person who's listening right now understands the risks. This is now up to you, the individual. It's 100% on you, the individual. So what exactly are we doing here? It doesn't make any sense anymore. We're not seeing an uptick in deaths like we did last year. Not only do we know that the vaccine works, we know that the treatments for COVID work. And if the health experts are saying right now what we need to do, because we're not going to get to herd immunity, is to effectively treat it like the flu, let's stop reverting back to old ways of dealing with COVID. It is May 2021. Let's start acting like it. Unfortunately, our Democratic governors will choose not to do that. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Crime.
So over the weekend, a small group of vegan umbrella twirlers, they took to the streets of Seattle for May Day. It was May Day on Saturday. They did their best to show their dominance against the police officers, but they were so outnumbered, frankly, it was embarrassing. There were quite a few arrests. The first two people were arrested when police said a coffee shop near Broadway and East Denny in Seattle was spray painted and damaged. It's always weird to me that these people end up vandalizing coffee shops, which pretty much are the only places that these people are qualified to get a job. Not long after that, police issued a public safety order because folks were placing flares on the road. A person was arrested after a carton of eggs, some of them filled with paint, were recovered. At one point, marchers blocked all the lanes at South Jackson Street and 8th. At one point, the Antifa lunatics blocked all of the lanes again before continuing to march and then throwing bottles and rocks and paint at police officers. Police officers issued their dispersal order. Two were arrested at that point. Then they went to Cal Anderson Park, where again they started to throw things at cops, including flares and bottles, more eggs, more paint, a bag of unidentified liquid. Didn't look very appealing. Imagine being the person who had to collect that liquid, because they're doing it all together at once, because it's like a commune. It looked like poop. When the group petered out, we thought it was over. 14 people at all in all during the day were arrested. Almost no one's going to be charged, of course, because that's what we do in Seattle. We make these arrests. We have the cops do some tough work, only to have the Seattle City attorney decide, I don't feel like doing my job. Let's release them. In fact, many of these people who were arrested were released same day, which means they were back to writing their erotica fan fiction by the end of the night in their studio apartments on Capitol Hill. But there was some pretty dramatic video that I was able to catch live when it happened on Saturday, and I actually posted it on Twitter if you want to catch it. Happened Saturday night. About a dozen or so Antifa lunatics decided to try to stop traffic right outside of East Precinct on Capitol Hill. And a white car was driving and it stopped. It tried to drive around the crowd. The crowd didn't like that. So one of the Antifa thugs, a woman, decided to jump on the front of the car. Turns out that was a mistake. The driver was an elderly man who apparently panicked to the point where he hit the gas pedal really hard. And I'm not an expert in cars, but it is my understanding that when you hit the gas pedal really hard, the car moves forward in a high speed.
Yeah, I can confirm that.
And said Antifa thug was on top of the hood of the vehicle when it happened.
Is that not just the socially distant Uber driver? Like you have the glass partition there?
At some point, she was definitely socially distanced when the car stopped.
Oh, because so, an object in motion stays in motion.
Yes. So my favorite part about all of this, however, there was an arrest at the end of this. Who do you think was arrested? The man in the car or the woman on the hood? And I say this with one caveat. At the end of the, when I give you the answer, I'm going to remind you that I love Seattle police. Who do you think was arrested?
Was it the woman on the hood?
I love Seattle police.
Oh.
They arrested the woman on the hood because she interfered with the driver who was legitimately, and I've got the video up again at Twitter. She was just trying to, the driver was trying to get out of the way. She tried to interfere with him driving out of the crowd. She made it worse. She broke the law. She ended up going to Harborview with minor injuries. She's fine, by the way. The car I'm talking about. The protester, I guess, is fine, too.
The car went to Harborview?
Yeah.
Wow, those are good doctors there. I mean, I know that they're, like, world-renowned, but impressive.
Harborview Auto Center.
Oh, the auto shop right down the street?
Right around the corner.
Gotcha.
If you text the keyword Twitter to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link to my Twitter feed. If you scroll down a few tweets, I've got the video up. It is very dramatic. Text Twitter to 1-800-465-8770. When we come back, an exclusive story. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? A Jason Rant exclusive.
It's only a story you're going to hear about on this show because we actually are one of the few shows that dive in to the local stories that matter most. And thanks to a tip from a listener, I found out that a local high school is bribing students with nearly half of their required community service hours in order for them to get the coronavirus vaccine. This is a bribe for students into making a medical decision that should otherwise be left to students and their families to make on their own. It's happening at Chimacum Junior Senior High School. It's out near Port Townsend. And like so many other schools, they require their students to fulfill their 55 hours of community service to graduate. And last week, students got an email from the staff with some ideas on ways that they can get their 55 hours. And it had a laundry list of different things that they can do. You can write a letter to the newspaper to get involved in a civic issue. You can pick up trash at the local park if you'd like. You can attend an online school board meeting if you wanted. But also, one of the ideas that actually came at a premium for hours, and it caught one parent's attention. Get the COVID vaccine. Students who got the COVID vaccine and submitted the paperwork to the school proving that they got that COVID vaccine, they would earn 25 hours towards their 55 hours of community service that they need to graduate, which is, of course, coercive. That is a form of bribery. And it's pushing kids into a decision that maybe they wouldn't have made otherwise. The pitch, of course, on its surface is incredibly appealing. I mean, think about it from the perspective of a 17, 18-year-old kid. You've got 55 hours, which is daunting. I will get you to almost half of it for something that, at the most, might take you a little over 30 minutes. Maybe even less if you're able to get the J&J shot. Yeah, you may not want it. You may not even need it. And maybe your parents didn't want you to get it. Maybe you even have a religious objection to it. Maybe there's something in your medical background that your doctor might say, maybe we're going to hold off on this right now because you're otherwise healthy and we don't necessarily know if this is the right decision for you based on your medical history. We don't know. That kid might now feel coerced into getting that shot so that kid doesn't have to spend 55 hours picking up trash at the local park. Now, the principal of Chimicum High School doesn't agree with my assessment. His name is David Cartham. He sent an email to me after I asked him some questions. He said, we're providing our students with opportunities to improve their community in ways accessible to them given the circumstances of this pandemic. Vaccination is just one of the voluntary ways that students can choose to fulfill this requirement. We know that immunization helps protect our community, which is why we call it a service. This is no coercion. Students can choose any of the options or suggest their own. Huh. Not everyone agrees with that. A father, for example, that reached out to me disagrees. That father is going to be on the show at about 5:15 later this afternoon. He calls it out because it's essentially placing an incentive on a medical decision that he believes diminishes the role of the parent in all of this. And he doesn't take that position as someone who's anti-vax the same way I don't take this position as someone who's anti-vax. I'm not anti-vax. I got both vaccines. I got my second shot last Wednesday. I got it because I know it to be safe for me. I don't need it to be mandated, nor do I need to be incentivized to take it. I did it because it was the right decision for me to make. I don't need to be pressured. Imagine, though, as a child, being put in a position where you're getting this kind of pressure coming from your principal, coming from your school, being offered this reward. Especially if maybe you are supposed to, you should, have a deeper conversation with your parent or parents. The dad in this case is 100% correct. He told me there are many in our communities who don't look at a COVID-19 vaccine as a necessary risk for their healthy children to partake in, and this may undermine that position. These decisions are for parents and families to make alone and should not be incentivized by public entities such as the public school system. Imagine for a moment the public school system or any governmental agency putting pressure on your kids to do other things that you may not want them to do. Medically, where does it end? Where should it end? Or better yet, where should it begin? Because I would argue it shouldn't begin anywhere. That medical decisions are better left up to you and your kid and your doctor. This is not for the school to get involved in. Can they do education around vaccines? Yes, 100%. But to dangle in front of them an easier route to graduation and then to claim, oh no, it's not coercive. That is ludicrous to me. That is absolutely ludicrous to me. This goes too far. Stop bribing people. Stop bribing kids with graduation to get vaccines. Again, you are sending mixed messages. You're sending the message that maybe there is something wrong with this vaccine that you have to bribe them into getting. Now, if you think this is outrageous and you want to make sure that it's not happening in your school, text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link to this story. So not only you can read, but you can post it on your Twitter feed and your Facebook wall and your LinkedIn account and your Parler page. Let's get some eyeballs on it. Let's see if people are aware that this is happening. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you a link. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. We're live on this Monday afternoon. Thank you so much for tuning in. There are two new reports that show people are ditching the city of Seattle and they're moving to rural communities like Sultan and Carnation. They're moving to Darrington. They're moving to Aberdeen. When you look at the numbers, it's actually pretty jarring. Carnation saw a nearly 15% increase in the median sale price for homes. It's on an average of 6 days on the market. That is a very small number. That according to Sotheby's. Now, when you look at a different report from the U.S. Postal Service, because they track numbers of people migrating in and out of communities, the city of Aberdeen ranked number 9 in the country for net in migration. That's the number of people moving into a community. Now, the reasons are across the board, but the impetus across the board is tied to COVID. COVID essentially has put a spotlight on the realities of living in places like a Seattle. What's happening in Washington State is not necessarily a Seattle problem. When you look in California and New York, when you look in these big blue states, in these big blue cities, you're seeing very, very similar situations where people are leaving the blue cities and they're moving to more rural areas. Some of them are leaving the states completely, but in many cases, they're moving to more red areas. And it's very obvious that when you don't have to live close to work, it gets you to re-examine your lifestyle a little bit. And I know a lot of you guys who are listening right now have done just that. You started to re-examine the situation that you find yourselves in. Now, maybe some of you have already made the moves. Maybe others said, I'm ready to start thinking about making a move, but not quite. Some of you are saying, man, I am so glad I got ahead of the curve. I moved to Carnation before others. I moved to Darrington before others. I got ahead of it. I got ahead of the rush. Because you start to look at it and let's say you're in Seattle. And you say, do I want to live in a small apartment that costs like $2,800 a month when I can't go to the nearby park because it's overrun by homeless people? I can't go to restaurants anymore because it's closed. If I walk to T-Mobile, or what are we calling it now?
T-Mobile Park.
What's the other one?
Lumen
Field?
The Lou.
Stupid.
Or what about Climate Pledge Arena?
Yeah, if I want to go to the Virtue Signal Park to see the Kraken play, do hockey players play or do they skate? I don't know. They play. I'm going to get harassed. I might get mugged. Do I really want to live in a city like that? And of course, if you have a family, if you've got kids and a husband and a wife, or not, and you just got kids, do you want, for the same exact reason, do you want to live in a small house that's way overpriced? Is that delivering to you the lifestyle that you want? And for a lot of people, you're saying, no, not when you look at some of the other areas that you could live in that's way safer, gives you a lot more space for way less money. I mean, when you can work from home, in a much bigger home, close to a park that you can take your kids, why wouldn't you make that move or at least consider making that move as a family? Right now, the reality for most businesses is remote working. So you could very easily move to Sultan, where the quality of life is far and away better than anything you can get in the city of Seattle for a fraction of the price. Why would you not make that move? Your family would be better off with that. A ton of people are moving to Aberdeen right now. Seattle ranks number 9 in the country for net out migration, okay? Number 9 in the country for the most people leaving the city. The city that everyone was talking about, people are flocking to Seattle. Everyone wants to live in this world-class city. They're coming here for the amazing entertainment options, the wonderful restaurants. They're coming to work for Amazon, which of course the city vilifies, blames for all of its problems. They're leaving in record numbers and they're going to places like Aberdeen.
You can tell by the feel of the traffic and just the parking lots and the shopping centers and things. It's way different here now than it was a year ago.
That's Tom Quigg talking to King 5 TV. He is a real estate broker out in Aberdeen. a city that most people outside of this region have never even heard of. And yet people are turning there to live. Prices, of course, as a result, are starting to go up when it comes to housing. The housing market, obviously, is different in Aberdeen than in a lot of cities, the same way it is in Carnation and Darrington and Sultan. You only have so many houses in these cities. And for them, they never imagined the housing market would be what it has since become.
In real estate, we're beyond the glory days. This is something that's not, it's unprecedented.
And a lot of those cities are not going to continue to just build a whole bunch of homes. They're going to hit a ceiling and they're going to stop building. Some of them will develop, obviously. But they're not going to become like Seattle or Everett or Tacoma or Bellevue. They're going to keep that rate low of housing because they want to maintain that feeling of a smaller community. And so there's only going to be so many places for folks to go. And a lot of people are even just leaving the state altogether. That's definitely what we've seen in places like New York and California. New York and California decided to just lean in on the taxes there. They're going after people who they consider to be wealthy. Now, wealthy to a California or New York liberal is way different than to a reasonable human being. And in Washington State, we're definitely seeing that. We're going after more and more taxes. We consider anyone who makes six figures as a family combined to be wealthy. We know that that is not wealthy in any traditional sense. We like in Washington State to punish people who have become successful. But no one wants to be taxed like that. The reason why a lot of people come into Washington State is to avoid the income tax, for example. But the fact that we're bringing in a capital gains tax, assuming it passes muster in courts, is just going to push more and more people away. And the fact of the matter is, a lot of them are already leaving. Here's real estate broker Beth Kovacevic.
This pandemic has made people focus on their families more. And that's been really a nice thing where I even have folks moving out of the state so that they can be with their elderly parents and work remotely.
A lot of people are putting their heads in the sand here. There's a piece in the Times today. Oh, Seattle's dead. Oh, no, it's making a comeback. Okay, you can keep pretending that these issues aren't there. You're in for a wake-up call. 1-800-465-877 if you want to send me a text message. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rantz Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. A Snohomish County asbestos testing company, they got hit with a 1,000% increase in unemployment taxes, only to find out it was a total mistake coming from ESD, the Employment Security Department.
Their tax rate for 2021 was to 2.63%, and our accountants like, that can't be right. It'll go from 0.23% to 2.63%.
It was only when the company hired an attorney and sent a letter to ESD that they started getting some actual responses. Chris Patterson is with this family-owned business, Asbestos Test Incorporated. Once they sent that letter, oh, well, all of a sudden they got some answers.
All of a sudden it was like, oh, yeah, we'll be looking into this and getting back. And then before too long, they said, yeah, yeah, sorry, that was a mistake on our part. This is your updated account.
Well, as you guys know, ESD rarely makes mistakes. So to help us figure out, sort through all of this is our friend Nicole Jennings from our sister station, Cairo Radio. Nicole, obviously ESD never makes mistakes. So this is
never
a rare blip on their otherwise perfect record. Take us through exactly what went down.
Yeah, this is completely rare. This has never happened before. No, unfortunately, not too surprising considering the thousands of people who have been, you know, legitimately waiting for unemployment, meanwhile fraudsters are getting paid. So I'm not really surprised that this happened. So this business owner, or actually he's not the business owner, his mom owns the business, but it's a small family run business, only six employees. He contacted me a couple of weeks ago because he about had a heart attack when he got his unemployment tax bill. He had been audited by ESD. First, they found out they owed a few $100s for something, and that was no big deal, and they paid it. And then next thing you know, they get this bill for $11,000, which was a 10 times increase on what their tax rate had normally been. And as we know, the unemployment taxes did have a pretty big spike for a lot of businesses this year because they have to refill the unemployment trust fund. But the thing is that the businesses that have seen a spike for the most part are businesses, first of all, with a lot of employees, because you pay the taxes per head, per person that you employ. And then businesses that had to lay a lot of people off, like ones that were closed quite a long time, gyms or restaurants or salons or those kind of businesses, because a claim in this case, it's unemployment insurance. So just as if you had a car accident, your car insurance would go up. Every time you lay someone off, your unemployment insurance goes up. But in this case, they have six employees. They didn't lay anyone off. They thought, this doesn't make sense. There is no reason for our unemployment insurance to jump this high. So they had their accountant look into it. They knew something was off, but they couldn't get ESD to listen to their concerns. ESD just kept email or sending them coupons to the forms to fill out to pay their bill. And he says it wasn't until they actually lawyered up that they actually got ESD to kind of jump to attention and really look into the math. And then all of a sudden the emails started coming into the lawyer's office saying, oh yeah, you know what? We've made a mistake. We're going to look at the numbers here again. And within a week, he got that charge waived. So it's really funny how quickly things turned around once the lawyer got involved.
Well, and that's a shame because presumably they had to pay for that attorney, correct?
Yes. Yes.
So that's a problem, right? I mean, they're not getting the cost of that attorney recouped.
No, and that's what I asked him. I said, well, what do you say to other businesses who may well be going through this but can't afford to hire an attorney? Because after the last year of having to be shut down or have reduced capacity, I mean, who can afford to hire an attorney to try to get yourself out of this?
So what's ESD saying?
Well, ESD told me that they couldn't comment on specific cases like this. They did tell me that there are a lot of reasons why someone might receive an inaccurate tax bill. They said if there was an audit like this, sometimes it takes a while for the numbers to match up, different things. It felt like they were giving me the runaround, honestly. And I, for the record, I emailed them in the morning asking for comment and finally got a response at 5:30 p.m. So this is pretty typical whenever I ask ESD for comment, unfortunately.
What, they wait until the last minute before they respond?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, I never actually get an interview whenever I ask for an interview with ESD. It's always just a statement.
Something tells me, though, if you don't reach out to them, they might complain.
Oh, yes.
Has that happened before?
Yes, it has.
Yeah.
And I want to be careful about always doing my due diligence and reaching out, because I do believe in telling both sides of the story. And I very much would like to hear their side. I would love to do an interview with them and learn about this, because there may be perfectly good explanations why all of these different things are going wrong, but I can't know that if I don't talk to them.
Totally. And what drives me nuts, though, about the story, and we're talking with Nicole Jennings, who's a reporter from our sister station, Cairo Radio, is that, look, I understand that mistakes happen, right? And when we're talking about these large bureaucracies, I expect mistakes are going to happen, and it's okay if you have a process that makes it easy to correct those mistakes. But you shouldn't have to, whether you're an individual or a business, you shouldn't have to hire an attorney and spend money on an attorney to get the attention of a department. It should be made so that individuals or a business can show a very clear problem, get the attention, and have it fixed. Are there no systems in place at ESD for a business to go to rectify a situation like this?
I don't think so. I mean, I think this is kind of what you're down to. And you know, I'm part of that group on Facebook, the group of thousands of unemployed people who are running into troubles with ESD, either not getting their claims paid or sitting in adjudication for months or appeals or what have you. And just judging by the posts that are on there every single day, I mean, there doesn't seem to be anywhere to turn if you're running into a paperwork error like this. And it's heartbreaking to hear, because I mean, so many people are having to sell off their possessions to put food on the table while they wait for ESD to get everything sorted out. In this man's case, I mean, his business was okay, and thankfully they didn't get hit with that $11,000 charge, but this was a lot of stress his family didn't need. His stepdad is battling stage 4 colon cancer. Oh. I mean, having to go through this on top of everything that they're already suffering, it's just unforgivable. And he said the worst part about it was he didn't feel like they were treated with humanity at all. He just felt like they were treated as a number.
And you're, I think, the only reporter in town that's actually still paying close attention to the problems at ESD. So let's talk big picture as far as unemployment is going. Where do things stand as far as that backlog is concerned of Washingtonians who are still or who have been struggling to get their checks?
I'm still seeing every single day on Facebook people saying that they've been waiting months. Actually, a Facebook friend of mine said that she waited months and was denied. I'm also seeing people who are told, who do get their payments finally and then are told to send thousands of dollars back. So many different things that people are going through. Jeez. And then ESD did have a dashboard at one point that showed how many people were waiting, because it would go from 20,000 to 30,000 or what have you. But ever since, I believe it was early January, this dashboard has been down. They said, oh, it had to do with the stimulus, with the changes to the system. Uh-huh. And they're going to have the dashboard back up as soon as they can have an accurate reflection of the numbers. But I've been checking periodically and I have not seen it come back up. So I don't know how many people are waiting for their claims, but...
Again,
it's a lot, I'm sure.
I will give benefit of the doubt in this case to ESD. We don't have a thriving tech sector in Washington State, and my assumption is that they just haven't been able to find a competent computer programmer to help fix that issue.
I mean, it would be so hard to find one of those around here. You know, nobody around here knows coding or anything like that.
We just don't do that particularly well. And that's that. I will give them a pass. This is so maddening that we're still dealing with these issues. And I still hear from folks who are out there listening who have been struggling to get just their basic unemployment checks delivered to them consistently. And like you, I'm hearing from folks who say once they get their check, they're being asked to give money back, or they're being told that they still have to jump through multiple hoops of not just uploading documents, but then taking selfies with their IDs next to their faces to prove that they are who they are. It is so absurd that in May of 2021, we are still going through this, and we have but one reporter who is actually talking about this, and everybody else in the media is kind of at the sleep at the wheel on this particular story. So I'm grateful that Nicole Jennings is actually doing what she can to highlight these absurd and maddening stories. Nicole, thank you so much for stopping by and giving us an update. Really do appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for staying on top of this.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rantz Show. Thank you so much. Really do appreciate it. Got another 2 hours coming up right after this.